South Africans doing great things.
She's been receiving blood donations since she was 10 years old. My apologies. Mbali is 22 years old and she was diagnosed with severe aplastic anemia. According to myoclinic.org, aplastic anemia is a condition that occurs when your body stops producing enough new blood cells. For about a year or two after her diagnosis, Mbali needed 8 units of life-saving blood every week. She joins me now, South African doing great things, Mbali Plosse. Mbali, am I saying Plosse or should I say Blues?
Good evening.
Good evening to you. Thank you so much for agreeing to talk to us. I appreciate your time and I appreciate the work that you're doing. Since the age of 10, you were receiving blood donations. Go back.
Yes,
tell me
sir.
Why.
That is right. When I was 10, I was diagnosed with aplastic anemia. As you have specified, it's a condition caused by the bone marrow not being able to reproduce its own blood cells. Mine is unknown as to why till this day, but I was a sickly child, so to say, growing up. If you go further into the research, it covers possible causes such as antibiotics, lead being one of the causes that could have triggered my aplastic anemia. And that it is. And when before being diagnosed, I had been exposed to lead at home. They were painting at home, and in those years, the paint still contained lead. And I was a helpful child. And a few weeks later, then this whole bleeding business started. And then a couple of 3-4 weeks later, I was at the hospital, unable to keep myself together, unable to breathe properly, unable to walk from one place to another without complaining about my legs or, yeah.
Sure. Just tell me about the lead story. What was it? Lead?
Yes.
It's my mind completely went to pencils. I mean, tell me a little bit more about that.
So lead is a blood thinner. It's a blood thinner. And, in those years, paint in South Africa also still contained lead. This was before 2010.
Yeah.
So to say 2010 years, the paint still contained lead. And if you inhaled lead, it could cause your blood to thin. And me being a child who had been exposed to the painting at home, assisting because I'm a helpful child. And like, I wanted to do everything.
Yeah.
You know, I wanted to paint. I wanted to do that. So I was extremely exposed to that paint for about 2 days or so. And yeah, I think the inhalation is one of the causes. However, it hasn't been completely unpacked with me as to what the actual cause was because there were so many factors around my health as well. I mean, as I said, I grew up being a sickly child before that. I used to be in creche. I was a child that was always in hospital, and antibiotics is another blood thinner. I was constantly taking a whole lot of that for flu, for whatever the case that happened, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And so what was, how did it manifest itself just on a daily basis, your daily life experience? How did this aplastic anemia manifest itself as a 10-year-old?
It started off with bleeding often through my nosebleed, and these nosebleeds weren't short nosebleeds. It was nosebleeds that took up to 2 hours to be cleared.
Sure.
You know, and when we're talking about 2 hours to be cleared, it's not just, you know, a couple of few drops, you know, and tissues here and there. It's my mom would say probably like half a cup would fill.
Wow.
Half of 250 milliliters would be filled, you know, with me bleeding on one Saturday. She had to measure the amount of nosebleed that came out, you know, and it became every Saturday kind of thing, you know, and I guess maybe because Saturday was my most hyperactive days, I guess because I was at home running around, doing all of that. And then I used to walk to school. School was about 10 minutes away, 10 minutes to walk away from home. However, like a two meter walk became a challenge for me. It really became a challenge for me, and I would start complaining about not being able to catch my breath, not being able to feel my legs because I just felt too tired for everything, you know. And from there, that was that was the beginning of the whole my situation of my parents taking it seriously, because I mean, I'm just 10 years old. What kind of a kid complains about walking just 2 meters? You know, what kind of a child complains about not being able to breathe? Because I don't have asthma, I don't have anything, you know. And when I was taken to the hospital, the doctor, first thing the doctor said was, wow, this girl is very pale. She's extremely pale, and the severity of her paleness tells you that she doesn't have any blood, yeah. You know. And he suspected leukemia at first hand, and he ran the test with no confirmation of what it was exactly yet. But after getting the test, he simply said that looking at my results, I could be basically compared to a tank of water, because that's how low my blood was. It was zero, in the 0-point-something section.
Sure.
And then he said, with that said, my parents, because he did not know if this was life-threatening or what it was, my parents had to then decide first if they're going to be taking me to a private hospital or a government institution, you know, to be treated. And that's where the test would be run. And 3 days later, after the test were run and I received my blood transfusion, and it was found that I have aplastic anemia.
It must have been harrowing for your family.
It was indeed. It was. I mean, it was new to my parents, because I mean, now the doctors had to ask more questions besides the past of my health. You know, as I stated on Spartix, there were more questions like, is the history of anemia in the family? Is there this? Is there that? You know, and none of that existed. You know, none of that existed. There was no history of anemia. There really was no genetic background, so to say, to account for the condition. And my parents educated themselves throughout the journey about my condition, especially my mom. My mom was very inquisitive, and she took it from being a teacher. She experienced too many kids passing on with the known leukemia, you know, in her teaching days. And that's what she thought it was, but she still took on the bait to educate herself, to understand, which, okay, so if the doctors are saying it's not leukemia, then what is this? You know, and that came with researching more about how to help my journey, understanding the cause better as the doctors listed, you know, understanding what can help me treat the condition, you know, beyond just the blood transfusion.
Wasn't there a bright spark that like emerged from nowhere and said, vamos, Louis, hey, wait.
there were such moments, very, very, very specific.
You've been bewitched.
Yes, very few times. I mean, we once came across an old man who claimed that apparently my blood was being used, you know, at the hospital, you know, in the corridor. An old man comes up to me and he says, you're not sick. Somebody's using your blood, you know. At one occasion, there was a lady in clinic who also claimed such, you know. But I guess, yeah, this is reality.
I tell you why I mentioned that. Because under normal circumstances, it probably wouldn't be relevant, because, you know, these things are there. But one of the things that we need to talk about as a society, as a community, is precisely the issue of how we bring myths to things that are sometimes not necessarily needing that, right? Where there is a simple explanation for sometimes we overly, I don't know, we embellish and we put all sorts of stuff in it, and then it causes more trouble and so forth. And I believe that's part of the work that you do, which is why I wanted you to tell us the story of your experience with aplastic anemia. In our communities, mostly where people, if we don't understand something, we resort to suggesting that it's witchcraft or something like that. And some people may argue, in 2022, Aubrey, no, it's happening. It's happening all the time.
It's happening even now in 2022.
What that does is that sometimes it slows down the process of finding the right kind of help. And by the time you do find the right kind of help, it's too late, because you were entertaining all of these other possibilities. And by the way, Mbali, that is not to say, You see?
Yes.
Because, hey, we've got to qualify everything we say.
Yes.
That is not to say that indigenous ways of understanding certain phenomenon are invalid. What I think I am saying, and I think that that's what you are saying too, is that sometimes the explanation is a very simple one.
No, not at all. Yeah. You know, not at all. However, we don't cast a blind eye indeed.
Sure.
To the views of other people.
Sure.
You know, by all means, let's let them have that freedom of expression. Let's let them decide and make their journey and find out for themselves.
Sure.
Or could see how they feel, you know, about whatever it is.
So ultimately, aplastic anemia is what?
Ultimately, aplastic anemia is just simply the organ that's supposed to make the blood, or rather, in simple terms, my body cannot make its own blood. That's what it is. As a result, I need other people to donate blood, since there is no machine to create blood, so that I can be able to receive the blood that is missing from my body.
Yeah.
Yes.
And I'm told that even at that age, at 10, you were needing what? 10 ounces of blood per what? Per day? Per what? Per?
Okay, so one blood, you know, it is 480 milliliters. That's almost half a liter. And with that said, I needed...
That's an ounce? Is that a unit?
Yes, one unit of blood is 480 milliliters. Yep. And every day, while I needed that blood, I needed at least 2 units every day for at least 4 days straight, you know, because I relied on 8 units in a week. So that's about, you could say, 4 liters.
Of new blood coming into your system every week?
Yep. Yes. 4 liters. That's what I needed, and with the whole situation of blood being a shortage in South Africa, so it wasn't so easy for me in a week for the doctors to be able to administer blood for 4 days straight. You know, because I see them two units at a time at least, if there was available 2 at a time, if not 1. It wasn't easy to receive them 4 days straight, like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. No, I could easily wait anything from 4 hours up to 4 days, depending on the severity of the shortage at the blood bank.
Mm.
You know, 4 hours is literally them finding out if they can get units from other hospital, because this hospital is short that I'm at.
Mm.
You know, there's emergency cases. And then 4 days is simply because my blood type, I'm A negative, and being an A negative blood recipient, I can only receive from A negative and O negative group. O negative is also a universal blood donor group. It donates to all the 8 groups of blood there are. Because of that, you know, sometimes if the A negative is not there, because it's also one of the shortened blood types, if O negative is there, let's say now the blood bank calls my parents and says, hey, you guys can come and pick up for your daughter. She's on the list and we've got blood now ready for her. Then about 15 minutes or so on the way to the blood bank, they get a call saying, I'm sorry, we cannot administer this blood now because there is a mother in maternity ward who needs it urgently.
Wow.
Or even a patient and ICU, an accident is happening, and under circumstances of a mother just arriving at labor ward, or an accident, somebody who's been in an accident as arriving at the emergency section, that's simply a situation of, look, this person is bleeding to death, we're looking at them right now, we don't know their blood type, but we can save them with O negative and find out the blood type later. So that's where O negative happened, and this is literally 4 days wait.
So I suppose, Mbali, it's very important for all of us, at least, to know what blood type we are, right?
Very, sir.
I don't even know what my blood type is. I don't. I mean, I'm being honest.
So you're not donating blood, are you?
I did once. I remember we had a thing here at 702 many, many years ago, and then we went, and you know, I lied on the table, and I had to squeeze something, and then they gave me some juice, but I can't remember.
And some biscuits.
I can't remember what my blood type is. So yes, no, I don't donate blood as I should. I should.
Yes,
yeah. And so it's important that this conversation be had, so that you know, we wake up to this reality. A couple of things, though, that I still want to get through about your experience, particularly with your parents at that age. And of course, the constant fear of your imminent, at least then, death.
Yes.
I mean, was that a real fear? That, you know, I mean, if you do get the call from the SANBS, mm-hmm. Great work, those people. I don't know how much. I don't know. We don't. I should do just a show on the South African National Blood Services. Those people are saints. You know, if I just listen to the stories out there. But just tell me about the tension of constantly fearing that you may die if you don't get your required
blood.
Yeah.
Yep. No, it was, you know, I always try to tell myself, look, you know, tomorrow's going to be better. I've been through a lot. You know, I've really been through a lot. But I think I always saw how much this tore my mom apart. My mom was always trying to be the strongest. And I guess in those moments where I saw my mom going through it hard emotionally, I would be the one to try and tell myself, you know, you need to be strong for your mom. You can see that she's not doing well, and she's had too many experiences already where she's lost children in her career to leukemia, you know, and what is it about? They needed blood.
And you'd be thinking about this at 10, at the age of 10?
Yep.
Oh, my.
Because my mom discussed my journey. My mom used to discuss her journey with us. She was very open with her journey about teaching and so forth. You know, she was very passionate even about the kids, and she taught in rural areas, you know. So it was just very close to home for her that, you know, at least my daughter can receive blood. But it was still very scary to her that, hey, you know, I mean my daughter's fortunate to receive blood, but tomorrow's never promised, you know. Tomorrow's never promised. However, my parents also did their duty to become blood donors. You know,
yeah.
They joined the registry as well to become blood donors, as they realized that this journey does not require just us as patients and parents to sit back and say, hey, look, blood will come. But they also needed to play their role, you know, to help somebody, because what if tomorrow happens? And when tomorrow happens, the sender says, you know, God forbid this ever happens, that, you know, due to the shortage, that one day somebody says, so who needs a blood transfusion? Oh, you need a blood transfusion. Let's have a quick look. Does anybody in your family donate blood? Oh, sorry, but nobody donates blood, so we can't give you. You know, and that was the thing for my parents, that, you know, in as difficult as this is, let's do it because somebody's doing it for our child. And yeah, that is.
But Mbali, you're 22, am I correct at the moment?
Yes, sir.
I was just listening to you. I mean, the maturity in your in the way that you speak, in your voice, speaks precisely of the journey that you've been through. In other words, I don't detect an unhappy person, but I don't detect the frivolity of most 22 years in your voice and in the way that you speak about stuff. Do you think that journey of being so close to some of the realities of mortality has been responsible for the deepening of your appreciation of life?
Yes, it has. It really has. I mean, you know, over the years I grew up with my peers saying that I'm kind of very boring, you know, because my choices due to my experience and my journey, you know, I mean, I always say that I've literally looked at death in the eye. I've looked at death in the eye, You know, I mean, at some point I didn't even have, my kidneys were failing. They were poor. And at this rate, even the doctors were saying, this child is not going to get kidneys anytime. And I keep deteriorating. I became physically paralyzed. I lost my speech. I lost everything. And that for me was really looking at death in the eye. How I made it through, I don't know. But due to such that I've been through and even being told, you know, when I was diagnosed with the anemia, that or when the doctor really ran the first test, he said I wouldn't live in longer than 5 months. Look at me now, 12 years later, I'm still alive.
Look at you now, Mbali Plos.
Given a five month countdown,
yeah.
You know, to say, yeah, even if she's going to get the good.
Oh, I'm losing Mbali. Mbali, are you still there? Oh, all right. Let's take a quick break and then reconnect with Mbali. Mbali Blosser, South African, doing great things, founder of the Blossom Foundation. We're going to go into a conversation about the work that she's doing in creating awareness for the need for you and I to start donating blood if you haven't started. I think I did it once. But I'm feeling convicted here, folks. I'm feeling a little guilty that I have not been involved in the provision of that particular service. Yeah. And you are probably getting the reason why it's important. But we'll continue that conversation with Mbali Plosa, a South African doing great things.
South Africans doing great things.
Indeed, we celebrate South Africans doing great things. And one such South African is Mbali Plosa, founder of Blossom Foundation. She's only 22 years old, but indeed you hear the maturity in her voice. And I think it's got to do with the journey that she's gone through with aplastic anemia. Maybe you've dealt with aplastic anemia. Give us a call. Or maybe you've dealt with a situation where you needed blood or a loved one needed blood. On a daily basis, or no, from time to time, I hear how the South African National Blood Services is making an appeal to us as South Africans to go out and donate blood. And, you know, there are also all sorts of beliefs around blood and whether it is, you know, a good thing to donate blood or not, and so forth. But I think the story of Mbali Blosa is a sobering one, yeah? But I'd love to hear from you. What are your experiences with the needing of blood? Was it there? Do you need blood? What do you say to those of us, myself included, who tend to be tardy about the matter? Yeah? I don't want to guilt trip anybody. Listen, kindness and your civic duty should not be something, your duty to humanity shouldn't be something that we make you feel guilty about. No. Let's tell the story and let your conscience guide you the way that it should. Yeah? Hey, man, I'm so tired of, hey, you must. I don't want to tell you must anything. I'm simply saying, here are the stories, but also here is the reality of the situation. I wish you and I could donate more. But I'm not going to go into this guilt-tripping thing. Yeah? 011-883-0702. So, Mbali, you have this foundation.
Yes.
What is it about?
So, Blossom Foundation is there to educate, inform, and create awareness about the importance of blood donation. What we do is, yeah, we really do educate, inform, and create awareness. We go out to schools, to corporates, and then we do. So I like to break down the three categories. Education is going out to schools, to corporates, and engaging with those people to try and encourage them to donate blood. Schools, because we're targeting the youth, our focus is on the youth, and we first blood donation starts at the age of 16, we try to encourage kids to that age or from that age to start registering to become blood donors. And we believe that if we start at the foundation of school, that it makes room for a better and improved South Africa later on. You know, it's best to start them early, they say. You know, and we've even gone as far as working with primary schools and encouraging kids to encourage their parents to become blood donors. And you see how the little ones are so excited to tell their parents and get involved and see when their parents donate blood. And then they say, I want to donate blood when I turn 16. You know, and that is, wow, it's so fulfilling to me because those are the future leaders.
Yeah.
Those are the future leaders of South Africa, helping us to have a South Africa that never lacks blood, you know, one day. And then when it comes to the informing part, we go out in public onto the ground and we engage with people at the malls, those places where public spaces, you know, and we try to recruit people that are walking by and inform them about what it is we're recruiting them for, you know, and hopefully they are happy to join into this initiative of helping people to donate blood, you know, or take blood, or them donating their own blood,
yeah.
You know. And then when we do the recruitment, we do it under circumstances where the South African National Blood Services has set up tents, you know, and are trying to run a blood drive. And if we find a decent public place or a place where we believe they can get enough donors, we let them know. To say, look, come through, even at schools, after doing the education, we tell them that, look, we've done an education, come through, the school is willing to have their kids involved. And, yeah, they come and they set up. And then when it comes to awareness part, this is awareness for me. You know, we're speaking on a mass media communication platform,
yeah.
That reaches a larger audience. So that will be through my social media, through television and radio interviews, you know, where we spread the word.
Hey, I'd forgotten that radio is a mass media communication
it
platform.
Is.
Hey.
It is. A corporate communication term, sir.
Excellent.
Yeah.
No, you know what? I've got tomorrow I'm going to look for an opportunity to say I work in the mass media communication platform industry.
Yes,
definitely. 0118830702 Mbali Blosser, South African doing great things, founder of Blossom Foundation. So let's say you go to a you are a Soweto girl, right?
Yes, sir.
Let's say you go to Jablan Mall.
Yes.
You find some people there walking around. What do you say to them, and what are some of the things that you get as questions or comments around the idea of donating blood?
The big question in the township is, how much are you going to pay me for my blood? Even at schools alike. I have to explain that.
Yeah, times is hard. Times is hard, Mbali. Times is hard. Yeah.
Let's open the dictionary. What does donation mean in the dictionary? Oh, okay. And I say that, you see, that is voluntary giving without expectation.
Yeah.
Are we in agreement? And then it's like, oh, okay. And then it's, so what if I need blood tomorrow? Is there going to be blood for me? And I say, well, what if your mom needs blood tomorrow? Are you going to still be talking like this now?
Yes.
And then it's, okay, yeah, actually, you've just triggered a thought, you know. And then with the youth, we really like to come at it from a perspective of, you guys like lots of things, alcohol, you know, drugs, all sorts of things. You guys go to parties and all sorts of things. When you get into accidents, where do you expect to take the blood to come from if you guys are not doing, you know? Then it challenges them to say, you know what, we will donate blood. And I've come across some who have taken that decision to say they donate during the week, and then come weekend, they go and they have fun. And they know they sorted. For them, it's a clear conscience that they've done their role, and they hope that they're safe. That tomorrow, if they need, they will receive, you know.
And some of the older folk, and I'm making reference to an earlier sort of conversation we had, you and I, around some of the beliefs around blood donation. What are some of the issues that you have to deal with at that level?
The older folks, it's the taboos around cultural thing. So they say, you know, they'll bring up things like how the ancestors will not approve.
Yeah, ke le sapola rona le na.
And then we have people in church, you know, and yeah. ministry who say as well that, no, this is unclean, this is not okay, which, like I said, we are not oblivious or we're not...
Funuktata ikazi labantu.
Exactly, that, you know, God heals, you know, so we believe in that, God heals, and I'm also a Christian and I go to church. God, I believe that at the foundation of it all, God is the essence of my life. I wouldn't be alive if it wasn't for God. It was God's decision to bring me into this journey, to be where I am today. It was God who made provision for that blood. You know, it was God who created the people to go and donate blood. You know,
I can imagine that some of those conversations and debates can get pretty heated at some point.
Yep, they do. They really do. You know, we've been changed. By churches as well, we've seen kids lose their lives. You know, I come from a ward where my doctor was very passionate to an extent of saying, look, if parents are going to deny their kids from receiving blood, then look, she's calling the cops because these kids have a right to life, you know. And that she was amazing. She was amazing.
And give me a sense of whether or not there are changes in attitudes and perceptions.
There are quite a lot. There are quite a lot, you know. We've had people even still donating blood. We still have questions like, where does my blood go? Does it really reach somebody? You know, and as Blossom Foundation, we're also trying to tackle that about the misconceptions that happened or things that happened back then, you know. Carte Blanche covered it as well at some point, that blood of the black community was being discarded. You know, this is the challenge that we're still dealing with even today, that, oh no, how do I know that they're not throwing away my blood because I'm black, you know? So these are some of the things we're trying to unpack and deal with as well. And then,
what is the answer to that? Let's just deal with it. So the perception is reality.
Blood like myself.
Sure. Let me just ask the question this way.
Mm-hmm.
The perceptions of people are their realities. It might not necessarily be true, but what I perceive to be true becomes my truth, right?
Yes.
And sometimes, you know, these issues are dismissible because they are sometimes a little, they're not that... they are innocuous. But once we deal with perceptions, with a matter as grave and as serious as this, perhaps we do need to focus and talk about it and say, there is a perception out there amongst black folk that their blood, when donated, is not used because of racist reasons. Let's address the question. Talk to me about that.
When addressing that question, for me, I mean, I have the experience. Okay, so what I've realized that the scientist does do is that for every blood unit, as a former recipient, I was very attentive. I'm observant. I like to look at everything, read everything, and my blood units are one of the things I would read. Like, okay, let me see today. And one day, I realized that, these different blood units have... the initial and the surname of the donor, you know, that's the niche detail that is there, you know, and I guess it's for traceability.
Sure.
You know, Sanders does run an accurate test to ensure that the blood is safe indeed,
right.
You know, for us to receive, our patients to receive. However, anything could still happen, you know, anything could happen and they could need to do the traceability. So I would read and I would see, oh, today, it's Janine, okay. Oh, today it's Mr. Moody, oh, okay, fine, you know, or something. And then I would also realize that, okay, no, I am getting different kinds of blood in terms of race blood because of my skin. I would have skin color changes. Sometimes I'm very pale or lighter in complexion, you know, fair in complexion. Sometimes I'm very oil skinned like color, you know. Sometimes I am.
Is that because of the race of the person whose blood you got?
Yep.
Really?
But definitely, because blood carries, and this is why also with blood, the bone marrow, you can't, as a, when you register as a bone marrow donor, you cannot you cannot give your bone marrow to a person of a different race. It has to be of the same race, because blood carries those genetics of
right.
Yes, or race rather. Yes.
So if I want to be Chinese, if I get more Chinese blood in me, I'll become Chinese.
Hey, don't do that. Yes, I mean, not necessarily Chinese, but yeah, you could see, I guess, some physical features like of your skin color.
Right.
Hey, no, something here is happening.
Oh.
Happening. Yep.
Of course. Hey, yep. Yeah. If we were to take this conversation to another place, I can imagine the calls that would be coming here. So I'm gonna leave that. But you are saying to me that one, the blood type, the blood that comes from a person who comes from a particular, I'll use the word race because that's the word we use, but I hold the position that we are all one race, we're the human race. But let's say, let's use those words for argument's sake. So for different groups of ethnic groups and so forth, the preference is to give people who come from the same ethnic group the same blood, right? So in other words, black for blacks, although it isn't always strictly that way.
I think honestly speaking, from a Sanders perspective, I mean, perhaps if there were so many donors, you know, out there, then that would probably be very possible and the better preference.
Yeah.
You know, but because in reality there is not so many donors, it really is what is there, you know, as long as it matches your blood type, you know.
Yeah, sure. And again, those kinds of considerations are not for eugenics, in other words, for the purposes of engineering people and humanity. It's really, if I understand you correctly, it's really for saving a life and medical considerations rather than all sorts of racial considerations. I think there needs to be a very, very sensitive campaign to explain that, because I can see how that can go really wrong, especially in our country. I can see how you have 4 hours talking about this and that and that, the other thing. But let me just, for my own sake, the preference is that people of the same ethnic group, in terms of the big sort of ethnographic categories, it is preferable for medical reasons for people coming from a similar ethnic group to receive blood. But that is not a life-threatening reality. It is a preference that does not necessarily have to be a standard.
Yes, true.
Yeah.
Simplified.
I hear you.
Simplified.
So ultimately, what are you trying to say to us this evening, Mbali, that we can take home
and think about? I would just like to ask you to take home the fact that even though, thank you so much, even though you don't see where your blood is going or who is receiving it, at the end of the day, there is still a life being saved with your blood, you know. Tomorrow it could be you. Tomorrow it could be your family member. Simply start now and don't wait for tomorrow to be involved in a situation of needing the blood, you know. And really, I think it's so amazing and it's so profound to hear men as well, you know, or different people who have experienced and how they become blood donors.
Yeah.
Sharing stories like how men will say, yo, I saw my wife in labor, you know, so much blood. And at that moment I realized that, that could have been very bad very quickly. You know, some will tell you that, if my wife needed blood in that moment. I've met high school kids who are actually also donating blood because they had to play their role, you know, in getting blood after seeing their own family members.
Yeah.
You know? So, really just do it for the sake of saving a life, guys. There's no machine to manufacture blood. We only have each other, you know, to create blood, and I don't think there will ever be, you know. So let's save each other now so that tomorrow there will be many more lives. You know, do it so that tomorrow you or your family member is still alive, you know. You don't know who you're doing it for that's going to play a role tomorrow in your life.
But Mbali, I want to say this, that and I understand that we could have a really technical conversation on who can give blood, under which conditions, which age, and so forth. For that, I'm going to ask you to give us your contact details and perhaps even the contact details of organizations such as the South African National Blood Services for people to get those kinds of information. But I've really enjoyed the conversation with you and how it has educated me on the attitudes, the thinking and the mindset that we need to adopt as far as blood donation is concerned. How do people get in touch with you, Mbali?
Blossom Foundation is active on all social media platforms. We have Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. On WhatsApp, our number is 0868-080-4056. And then our website is www.blossomfoundation.org.za. However, our website is temporarily down due to server issues. Our host is something else, but that will be sorted in about a week or so.
All right. Mbali, as I stand up to salute you, your team, and the work that you do, I thank you, and I ask you to never stop. I want to thank your mom and your dad for going through what they've been through with you, and long may your message be heard, may it resound, may it resonate through the airwaves as you and I speak, and I really wish you all the best as you continue with your very, very important work.
Thank you so much, sir. Oh, yeah, lastly, you did ask about my personal, finding me personally. Personally, I am on I'm on Instagram as mummy_Bali, and then on LinkedIn, Mbali Blose. You'll see in my bio, it should say communication specialist, talk a little bit about my history at the Sandlers. You'll just see in the bio. And then on Facebook, Baka Bailey. And yeah, I think Twitter is on Mbali Blose.
Mbali Blose, let me stop you there and thank you very much for agreeing to talk to me, by the way. I really appreciate
it. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you for having me.
Mbali Blose, founder of Blossom Foundation. She even calls me sir. Hey,